This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Happy hump day, D-Aliens. What's up? This is EJ Stewart. You're listening to the best of the DA show coming at you right now.
Happy Wednesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 4-hour Big Bang Barbecue. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Des Moines, D.C., Kalamazoo, and Waterloo. Hey, you're on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. Appreciate you dropping on by. Good show lined up for you this morning. A lot of NFL heading into week number 3 in 20 minutes. Who's to blame with Justin Fields not elevating to the next level? In 40 minutes, a Wednesday staple, a champ and a chump. Later on in the show, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, Charles McDonald, will join us here on the program. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys, as Dallas begins 2-0, a sweep of the New York teams. Barely broke a sweat doing it. 40-0 in week number 1 over the Giants. 30-10 on Sunday over the Jets. And this week should be another easy victory. The Cowboys travel to Phoenix to take on the lowly Arizona Cardinals. Although, let's face it, the Cardinals have shown more pluck than most would have assumed coming into the season, specifically the Wizard, who's bet against them twice and lost twice. It's the Wizard of Oz. Either way, Cowboys are feeling good and doing well.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Micah Parsons, yesterday with Pat McAfee, talking about how special this team is. They are rolling right now. And that since they're all comfortable with one another coming out of last season, this is set up for a wagon of a type season. Okay, so they should go to 3-0. They're a big favorite this weekend over Arizona. But does beating the Giants, the Jets, and the Cardinals really tell us how good or great the Cowboys are? When will we really know who the Cowboys are? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Ball near the left hash. Prescott in the gun. Back is on his left. Snap goes back. Looking to his left. Looking. Checks it down. Ferguson at the one. Leans over the pylon. Touchdown.
Go to Arizona and get win number 3. Simple as that. That's where our focus is. That's who we are right now. That's all we're focusing on. Carpe omnia and staying in the moment right now. And that's as simple as that. We know what we can get to. We know who we are. But it's about attacking each and every day, our preparation, and we're not going to get any further than Arizona. And I think that's how we continue this rhythm.
I mean, we're off to an outstanding start. The pressure and the takeaways are, an incredible level after 2 games. So, this group has taken it up a notch, clearly, from last year. I think from top to bottom, not only our veteran players, but our younger players are really contributing.
Yeah, it just means that you're improving. Those little things you talk about, finishing games, closing them out, smothering people, not giving them that hope and dream that they could come back in this game and think they're on the same playing field as us. That's the type of things you want to see, not the constant repetition. That means you're not learning. So I'm very happy where we're at right now.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
You heard Brad Sham on Cowboys Radio with your play-by-play. Dak, head coach Mike McCarthy, and Mike Parsons. A lot of power rankings at this point in time done around the NFL by observers and media have the Cowboys as the best team in the NFL, if not one of the top two or three teams in the NFL. And undoubtedly, they're a good team, and inarguably, they had two very impressive wins. But, I mean, it means nothing. Those two wins mean nothing, and they really don't tell us how great this squad can be. And I'm hearing a lot of the same rhetoric around the Cowboys and within the Cowboys that gets them into trouble every year, thinking that they've won the Super Bowl in September, that somehow a blocked field goal for a touchdown and a pick six en route to a destruction of the Giants, who played like absolute slop, is an indicator of how great they are. You're not going to get blocked field goals for touchdowns. And yes, while turnovers have been great for the Cowboys through the first two games, as McCarthy talks about, let's not put the wagon before the horse, because game one, everything went to hell in a handbasket in the first quarter and the second quarter for the Giants, and the rest of the night was just meaningless. Week two, you played Zach Wilson. I mean, there really is no true indicator of how good this team is yet. Now, we'll get it shortly, but it's going to be a few weeks. They've got the Cardinals this week, and they'll probably destroy the Cardinals by three touchdowns. And once again, everybody in Dallas will be making their Super Bowl plans. The following week, they have the Patriots at home. They should destroy the Patriots. As we've seen, New England, an 0-2 team, they should not win that game. Following that, okay, now we've got a real litmus test. They travel to San Francisco to take on the Niners. That's a Sunday night football game. Niners, Cowboys, week four. Now we're starting, or week five. Now we're starting to understand who the Cowboys truly are. After that, they've got the Chargers and Rams, and then a trip to Philadelphia. They've got a bye week in there as well. Between a trip to San Francisco and a trip to Philadelphia, those are the indicators of who the Cowboys are, because let's face it, the Cowboys could be 13-4 this year, and they might be the third best team of their own conference. They might be the second best team of their own division. So I'm just not ready to get ahead of myself with the Cowboys, because every year this happens. A good start leads everybody with preseason expectations to start believing that this is the year, and then something goes kablooey later on in the season, and beating the Giants the way that they did and beating the Jets minus Aaron Rodgers, these are not great indicators yet. Now, the turnovers, the defense, Micah, etc., hey, they can play D. And whether it's the Giants or Jets or somebody else, but you've got to also beat really good teams. And I just once again sense that everybody is just assuming this is the Cowboys' greatness, being 30 to 40 points better than teams. The Giants laid the biggest, stinkiest turd ever, and then you played Zach Wilson. Everyone's going to kill Zach Wilson. We cannot extrapolate from that. Oh, see, the Cowboys, they're just as good as we thought. Hey, you beat bad teams and you beat them badly. Great. But that doesn't tell us whether you're better than the Niners, the Eagles, or you're ready for a deep playoff run yet. This has nothing to do yet with whether the Cowboys can get it done when it matters in January.
855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227, or on Twitter, DA on CBS.
I've heard a lot of people say that Dion's going to be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And I think some people say it laughingly, and some people say it seriously. I'm not going to go there yet. And I think there's a couple of reasons why I think that's very premature and or inaccurate. Number one, if the Dallas Cowboys are, again, a 12, a 13, a 14-win team this year,
even if they flame out in the playoffs, would Jerry fire Mike McCarthy after three consecutive 12-plus win seasons? I mean, this is almost worst-case scenario where the Cowboys are probably going to be pretty good, but may flame out again in January, and then you're faced with a really difficult decision. You have all of this great regular season success 3 years in a row, and yet does it matter? And is Jerry Jones going to pull the trigger, a guy that kept Chan Gailey around and Dave Campo around and Jason Garrett around? He's really going to fire the guy that went 12 wins, and 13 wins or something? That's the first part. The second part is it a premier prestige job? Of course, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Deion has roots, played in Dallas, knows Jerry well, Cowboys hero. But what Deion is doing right now, to me, is specific to kids. That's the magic with Deion right now. He's selling to kids. And in college, you sell. You sell to recruits. You sell to recruits' families. You sell to boosters and donors. A college football coach is a salesman, okay? In my job, what I do, if we made a call and we're lucky enough to have a pretty good visibility within the industry, popular around the country, a lot of affiliates, if we make a call to a sports information director this week and say, hey, we'd like your coach on. If we can't get that coach on, we get an email back or a call back. Hey, sorry, we can't do this. Let's set something up later in the season, but let's try in the off season or when we have an off week. And if we just request enough, we get plenty of college football coaches around here wanting to come on. We can send an email to every single NFL team every day of the season and go over a one-on-one with an NFL head coach. Because NFL head coaches don't have to sell. They have a finite amount of media responsibilities, and then they don't want to do anything else because they don't have to do anything else. They don't want to do one-on-ones. They want to do one press conference for everybody, assembled media, and then they're done and they're in there watching film and practice and whatever. College coaches have to sell. You got to get your voice out. You got to get your brand out. Deion's magic is the sale. He's interesting. He's cool. He's counterculture. He's non-traditional. All of those things. He's brash. That's his magic. And he's connecting to kids and kids' families. You don't have to do any of that in the NFL. The NFL is scheme. The NFL is X's and O's and scheme. Everybody's got good talent. You're in the NFL. You're not recruiting. Yeah, there's a few free agents that you go out and try to get, but really you're locked into salary cap restrictions and what your owner wants to do or what your GM wants to do, and he's not going to be the GM or the owner in Dallas, obviously. It's a draft, so you just kind of take best available players. I don't think Deion's a fit at all in the NFL. What he's doing in college is college specific. Now, he could probably do this anywhere he wants in college. I don't think that this is specific to Colorado or Jackson State or anything like that. I think this is transferable from school to school to school. But I don't think it's transferable to the NFL. So I would hesitate once again on speculation that, oh, after the season, they're going to fire Mike McCarthy and Deion's going to take over, or Deion's headed for the NFL at some point in time. Deion's smart enough, smarter like a fox, to know his shtick works when he's selling to 18 and 19-year-olds or transfer portal kids and their moms and dads. That's what's working.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's Champ or Chump.
All right. College football wise, your champ
is Miami tight end Cam McCormick. Cam McCormick is 25 years old. And Cam McCormick has petitioned the NCAA for a ninth year of eligibility. He began his career with Oregon in 2016. Note that he spent the first 7 years of college at Oregon. Now he's at Miami and looking for a ninth year of eligibility. Cam McCormick redshirted in 2016, played in 2017, broke his ankle in 2018. Because of repercussions and complexities from that broken ankle, missed all of 2019 and 2020, played in 2021 but tore his Achilles, and then last year finally got on the field for all 13 games, caught 10 passes, was very efficient, 3 touchdowns with those 10 passes caught for 66 yards, then transferred to Miami this year and is petitioning for a ninth year. Most of us spend 2 or 4 years in college. Cam's already at 8 and looking for 9. If you want some perspective and context, Cam McCormick committed to Oregon during the Obama presidency. The man wants a ninth year. Give it to him. Let's see how long this can go. Can he be playing tight end in college football until he's 30 maybe? How do we get this thing done that Cam McCormick is catching passes in college football as he's middle-aged? Can we get there? He's in his 8th season in college football, and he wants a 9th. NCAA, give it to him! Cam McCormick,
that's DA's champ.
Is your champ. EJ, you were nodding your head. You've heard of Cam McCormick.
Of course. I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, so I've heard about this story. And look, he's heard that maybe the U's back at 3-0. And he wants to jump on the bandwagon. Why not? He'd be the first tight end at Miami with, an AARP card.
Your chumps on the week. Oh, no. East Carolina. East Carolina is 0-3. They could be the worst team in college football. They are 0-3 following double-digit losses to Marshall and App State. ECU has yet to reach 300 yards of offense this season. They haven't gotten to 300 yards of offense yet this season. Mike Houston, at least put together a day where you can put together 300 yards of offense. East Carolina, the chumps.
That's DA's chump. Class is now dismissed.
And they're lucky. They're lucky because they might not have even been mentioned this morning. I was leaning toward the UB Bulls of Buffalo after they got beat by Fordham, by Bogus's Fordham Rams, as the FCS Rams hung 40 on Buffalo. But I figured, you know what? We'll aim at East Carolina. Not that I take any glee in this, but they're really, really.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
All right, welcome back. So glad you're with us. You can always listen to the show in podcast form, the best of the show, or the full 4 hours available every single place you just get your podcast. Just simply search The DA Show. The Steelers offense has been rough to watch through the first 2 weeks. Week number one, they were suffocated by the 49ers. Week number two,
They had two defensive scorers to beat the Browns on Monday Night Football. Steelers fans not happy with OC Matt Canada. Here's Mike Tomlin.
This is the sport entertainment business. It is our job to win and thus entertain them. And so, you know, we don't begrudge them for that. We want them to be fat and sassy and spoiled. It is our job.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm listening,
all
Mike
right.
Tomlin.
We want you to be fat and sassy.
Hired.
Okay. Make me a Steelers fan today.
Yeah, I mean, I already love the guy, and all he wants is for me to be fat and sassy.
I love this.
Done.
Feed me all the Primanti brothers you can, all of the Iron City Light that you can. I just get to sit there like a bump in a log, get fat. I get to be sassy and spoiled. Ooh la la, as Amy Trask might say.
Like the best advertisement for what it means to be a football fan. Like if you had anybody who was kind of on the fence,
yeah.
Mike Tomlin saying, hey, you could be fat, sassy, tell me to fire my offensive coordinator, hey, assistant coach. Doesn't matter. That's what we want. That's our job, is to take this kind of punishment.
We honestly should bring that slogan as American NFL fans over to the UK as they try to expand the sport into Germany and the UK. Hey, here we're fat, sassy, and spoiled. Don't you love this?
Now they already know that outside.
That's probably
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
I think that's our reputation in general.
It is. But I will add this. Brandon Tierney can keep his unkillable t-shirt. Get me a fat, sassy, and spoiled shirt in black and gold immediately.
Fat, sassy, and spoiled.
We got friends in Pittsburgh. If they're not making a shirt with those three words on it by noon today, they're doing it wrong.
Every star on the Steelers helmet represents one of those. Fat, sassy, spoiled.
Sassy's definitely the red star.
Sassy, fat, sassy, and spoiled.
And if I can be spoiled as well for a second, fire Matt Canada. Enough.
Yeah, right, yeah.
They're not wrong.
I know.
If we're friends now, Mike, that's a suggestion. Get a new guy.
Let's go to Dame Lillard, who is still stuck in his Portland Trailblazers purgatory, but playing for the Blazers? No, that's a bridge. Or playing for the Warriors is a bridge too far. This is from the It Is What It Is show on YouTube.
As far as like Golden State, like I respect what they, you know, what they've been doing over the last 8-9 years or whatever. And I'm from there, obviously that's home, but I can't go be a part of that.
I agree.
Like they done won 4 championships. Like what I look like going to try to do that and say, oh, I'm joining my home team. Like, no, it's somebody that played my position. That's, you know, behind LeBron, the best player of this era. You know what I'm saying? So it don't even, to me, that don't even make sense. That ain't, I never do nothing like that. I lose every year before I go.
There is something certainly that's admirable about this, that he does not want to be just a third wheel, another cog. You guys have all won without me. I don't want to just jump in here and gravy train. It might be my hometown team. But it's always, as he's kind of saying there, it's Steph's team. It's Steph's rings. I'm not just going to jump on board and gravy train rings there. Okay. And certainly Dame Lillard has a certain pride about winning his way. He's wanted to win by being the guy in Portland. Ultimately, it's not happened. But if he's willing to go kind of form a bit of a super team in Miami, is it much different than just going to Golden State to win a championship?
I mean, look, the Miami Heat have been to the finals more often in the last 4 years than the Golden State Warriors. They went during the pandemic year in the bubble, and they went last season. And you're joining All-Star Jimmy Butler, All-Star Bam Adebayo. Like, I feel like Dame Lillard is trying to hold on to this image we had of him being this principled guy that won't join super teams and wants to do it on his own and is so loyal. He now knows that facade is over. I mean, this guy's literally been telling teams, allegedly, that he'll be angry if they trade for him and it's not the Miami Heat. I mean, how could you be the guy who's like, I'm too big to play for the Golden State Warriors? I mean, come on. What do I look like? But I will join the team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals the last 3 years, went to the NBA Finals 2 of the last 3 years. That I'm all good for. But the Golden State Warriors, no, no. That's a step too far. I'm a principled guy. Come on, Dame. I love Dame, but this was ridiculous to me.
Yeah, and you can't live in between like this. You want to stay in Portland and say, I only want to win here. If I don't win, and you know, I don't want to win anywhere else, that's fine. But once you open the door to leaving Portland, then you can't pick a new hill to die on in where you're going to win outside of Portland. Yeah. Once you're willing to go, go wherever. And maybe it's my lack of pride. Go pick the easy. You've done the hard thing for a dozen years. Pick the easy way out. You now understand it's time to get a ring. Go where you can get a ring. If that's Golden State or Tuscaloosa or wherever, just go and get the ring as easy as possible. Why are we signing up for anything less than that at this point? I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
I like that take. You've done the hard part. You've spent 10 years in Portland without winning. Now just do the easy part.
Right.
Join the team that'll help you win a championship.
Yeah, go to Golden State. Be the guy that helps them get back to where they used to be. That's a storyline. If he went there and he was their second best player and he's the one that restarts or, you know, puts the kind of the exclamation point on this little dynasty, why can't he be that? What's wrong with that being that guy?
But he's so stuck in his head about this being this guy who is this, again, this loyal, principled, I'm not a super team guy. Like, he's stuck in that image, and he won't allow himself to think beyond it. So somehow he is conjured up in his head, okay, I did kind of be disloyal by saying I do want to leave Portland, but I'm not going to the Warriors, so therefore I'm still this guy who's down for the cause. Like, it's all a makings of his imagination.
Maybe it's because the Warriors have beaten him so often. They were the ones that swept him in the Western Conference Finals, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So maybe it's just that he's always had kind of an axe to grind because that's his hometown team. They were always winning everything. He was winning nothing.
And I kind of think if there's maybe a chance this was a slight dig at Chris Paul. I mean, Chris Paul is a great point guard, a Hall of Famer, who went to the Golden State Warriors to play behind Steph Curry, who apparently had this long-standing beef with the Golden State Warriors. I also saw this and thought, is he thinking about somebody by saying, I couldn't be that guy? He's saying he can't be Chris Paul?
Yeah.
That's saying a big thing. Chris Paul's an all-time great.
If it's not directly to Chris Paul, it is indirectly to Chris Paul.
Yeah, because I my guess is Dame thinks he's better today than Chris Paul is currently.
And he is.
Right. So I don't know that he sees them as equal in terms of like this decision, but there's no way to completely disconnect Paul from these comments.
Right.
Because somebody's actually doing the thing that Dame thinks is a mortal sin.
Yeah, that's Dame right. says he'd lose forever, then right. ever go to that team.
Right. Finally, here's Niners linebacker Fred Warner, who's talking about how the Niners got together and watched Colorado versus Colorado State on Saturday.
We are in the hotel the night before the game. All right. We were sitting in the meal room. They got called football on the night before games, right, on the big screen while we're eating our meal. And when I tell you that everybody is in that meal room, dialed in.
Everybody.
Dialed in watching Colorado versus Colorado State.
Colorado State. Exactly.
Like, and they're literally
exactly.
like – jumping at every exactly. single little play to start that game. Like, it was exactly. as if we're watching the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. that in itself right there, that's all you need to know about what Deion has done to that program.
Exactly.
And so, man, I mean, you talk about a story. And it's in his first year, too. Like, imagine how he's going to be like next year and going forward.
That's from the Warner House podcast. It's a good anecdote. It gives you a good visual. The Niners getting together, eating their meal the night before the game, the team hotel, and they're going crazy for a Colorado State, Colorado game. But it's funny how everybody lives in their own little silo. It's like we have all these metrics of how Deion has moved the needle. All of these metrics of television ratings, recruits, five-star kids are now looking at Colorado, a visit here, a visit there. Wu-Tang is on the sideline. Chris Rock is performing in Boulder. Like, it's the biggest thing. Game day and Big Noon Kickoff are at the same place doing the game. But Fred Warner's view is, if it didn't tell you that Deion's moved the needle before, we were all watching the game
the
and going Niners. Crazy. That the 49ers were watching the game as we ate our Salisbury steak, and we were into it. If that doesn't tell you how popular this team is, it's like, yeah, no, we got it, Fred. They're really popular. It didn't take you guys, didn't take Christian McCaffrey pumping his fist as he eats mashed potatoes to tell us that they're really popular these days.
Brock Purdy in his Shador Sanders jersey eating his Sunday right up against the big screen, rooting on the Buff.
oh my God, Debo went up for a second Sunday because we were so hyped up about double overtime.
We usually splinter at night. 53 guys, 53 rooms. There's no hanging out. But this Saturday, thanks to Dion, we were one group for 3 hours, and then we won the next day.
I forgot to put sprinkles on the Sunday. It was crazy. And that's your sound check. Free Basing Expos tweets me a picture of Primanti Brothers and simply says, hashtag fat and sassy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, putting French fries on a sandwich is about as sassy as it gets.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. God, every time I see a picture of Primanti Brothers, I just, one of those Sandoz, I just feel like I just want to dive headfirst into the computer. So the Jaguars want to build a kind of a brand new arena or stadium for the Jaguars with major renovations so that it almost looks brand new. It's the same facility, same footprint, but they want to do massive, massive renovations. And they want about $1 billion in public money, or a total maybe, but there's, yeah, I think about $1 billion in public and then another close to $1 billion in private. I mean, this is a massive, massive project for this stadium that houses the Jaguars. Of course, when the Bulldogs and the Gators play as well, amongst other things in Jacksonville. So according to the story in the Jacksonville Business Journal, more than half of Jacksonville residents would prefer the city sell the stadium and the surrounding land instead of using city money to pay for the renovations. 6%, only 6% of those respondents said the city should devote the $1 billion in public money to the renovations. Only 6% of respondents say, yeah, take $1 billion and put it into the stadium. Most said, let the team pay for the renovations. One third of those who responded said they'd be okay spending $500 million or less. So half $1 billion. The Jaguars are looking for $1 billion. But most people said no to spending the full $1 billion of taxpayer money, even if it meant losing the team. I hope that this is the beginning of all of these owners realizing the fire hose of free money has run dry. And it's been a sham for many decades, and it has held so many cities hostage for many decades, and it has been used as the guillotine hanging above your heads and above politicians' heads for many, 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 many years. If you don't say yes, we move the team. You want the team, don't you? And you don't want to be responsible for losing the team. Do you want that blood on your hands? Do you want to be the reason that we have to move? And it's ridiculous. It's patently, absurdly ridiculous. Exhibit A. What will the NFL pump out all week this week? Higher ratings than ever! Cowboys and Jets registered a so-and-so television rating, making it the second most watched event in TV in 2023, behind only the Super Bowl, another one of our events. Ratings are up for ESPN's Monday night. More people streaming and watching than ever before. Television ratings through the roof for Sunday Night Football. Football fans can't get enough. Football is the king. Deion Sanders' Colorado Buffaloes register the fifth most watched ESPN college football game ever! Ever! Look at how popular we are! But we need your money. This is the sham. Major League Baseball, look at the valuations of teams. $1 billion here, $2 billion here. These owners bought in for $50 million, $150 million, $200 million. Now their franchise is worth $2.2 billion. Now they are dropping the percentage of ownership you need to have because people can't even cobble together the billions of dollars you need to own teams. So television revenue just keeps growing. It's not like CBS gets a deal this year to broadcast the NFL. Across the board, was it 92 of the top 100 television shows in America last year were NFL games? The valuation of these franchises, every time one sells, what, the Commanders just sold for $6 billion? $6 billion! And then they turn around and go, but we need your money for the stadium. You get it, right? It's for you. But, you know, you guys can use this for other stuff, too. And you wouldn't want to lose the team, would you? Let me ask you. Do you pay more or less for a jersey at NFL Shop today than you did 15 years ago? Do you pay more or less for that Steelers hoodie at NFLShop.com? Do you pay more or less for that Eagles t-shirt at Fanatics.com? Do you pay more or less for that Bills snapback than you did 15 years ago? Let me ask you this. Do you pay more or less for the ticket to the Niners game than you did 15 years ago? Do you pay more or less for the beer or the parking than you did at a Buccaneers game 15 years ago? The answer across the board is no, 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 no. Today we pay more. We pay more for everything. It's not just inflation. They have gouged the prices knowing that we'll still pay it. Oh, great flash sale on Fanatics. Oh, my God, 10% off my $80 hoodie. Oh, I saved $8 on my $80 hoodie. Great. They gouged us in prices all across the board, all their licensed merchandise that goes to them, all of their concessions that goes to them, the parking that goes to them, the ticket prices go to them. They make more money than ever in television contracts. And then when it comes to pay for their stadiums, they go, we don't have the money. We're going to need you guys to help out. We're helping out every single freaking day. Every day we help you out. So no more free cash for you guys. You're billionaires. John Fisher bought the A's for $180 million. A buck 80, 20 some odd years ago. Has never invested a dime into the infrastructure of the Oakland Coliseum. Has never re-signed a free agent. So has invested no money in the team or the facility. He spent $180 million to buy the team, of which none of it is his own making. His mom and dad created the gap. He will have a team when he moves to Vegas, or currently if he wanted to sell it today, that is worth $2 or more billion. And here he is going, I'm going to need your money to build a ballpark. I just don't have enough. And if you don't give it to me, I'm moving. How come you didn't make this easier on yourselves? You should just give me all of the money up front. Instead, you're making it hard. I think I'm just going to move it, which is what's happening in Jacksonville. I mean, the NFL only has 32 of these things. The Jaguars are easily worth $3 billion if Shad Khan wanted to sell today. Easily. If the Commanders get six, you're talking about a $2 to $3 billion property that Shad Khan owns today. But he needs $1 billion of taxpayer money to renovate the stadium? Now, look, it looks beautiful, the renovation, the designs look immaculate. But how can you, with a straight face, any of these billionaire owners in these leagues keep pulling this sham? We just don't have the money. It's all over the place how much money you have. We're the victims of all the money that you make. We're the customers. But it's the shell game. It's the shell game of, but if you don't do it, somebody else will. And the only way that this musical chairs ends if there's municipalities that won't do it. And for Vegas, you know, there's no Vegas resident that I hear going, this is ridiculous expenditures. They go, yeah, we want a baseball team. Or their mayors or their constituents, or rather their politicians, want to be the ones that bring the baseball team to Vegas to be popular, to be at the ribbon cutting, to have that shovel in the ground photo op. You know, so everybody uses everybody, but it's a total scam. And good on the Jacksonville residents that are like, yeah, no. $1 billion? Here's $1 billion of free money to a guy worth billions. Isn't that a nice racket? Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS.
And now,
woo-hoo!
We are stunned.
Yeah!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
DA, let's go through the levels of idiocy just for a second.
Please.
The very bottom rung, your entry level idiocy, if you will, is, say, a Pat Boyle diving through a table outside a Notre Dame game to crickets, to nobody noticing.
Right. Nobody egging him on, nobody even turning around.
Exactly. Then in Buffalo, they jump through tables to cheers. Sometimes the table's on fire. There's other dangers involved in it, right?
Mustard and ketchup all over
you. Exactly. Then there's this. You could always, if neither one of those two things is good enough for you, you could always, before a Bills game, like this past one with the Raiders, you could get high. You could climb a fence.
I saw some of that in Buffalo in the parking lot last season.
You could fall into a ditch.
I saw a fence as well.
Okay. Before Bills Raiders Sunday, a still unnamed 29-year-old man took some drugs, maybe some LSD. Now, most of us would have been done for the day at that point. But this guy went into a porta potty, took off all his clothes, covered his now naked body with the contents of said porta potty. Sometime after that, it appears, somebody called security.
Is this still pregame?
Pregame. This is all in the noon Eastern hour Sunday. It's the other pregame show.
that other pregame poop show.
So as security approaches, this dude, because he's going to make good decisions, runs towards the construction site for the new Bill Stadium. He climbs a 10-foot fence and makes his first fall into the hole. He starts to run again and falls even farther down.
Oh, my goodness.
Now we're 30 feet below
sea
level. I don't know how to explain it.
Wow.
There is even like a police helicopter on scene, and they say as they're hovering over this guy, laying in the hole, covered in porta potty remnants, with one hand he gives them the peace sign, with the other, I'm guessing, the middle finger.
Yes.
It took firefighters, medics, and officers about 20 minutes to get the dude out. He freely admitted weed, LSD, other stuff. And all he gets for, apparently, is a misdemeanor for trespassing was the only charge he was given on Monday.
And he fell 30 to 40 feet down in the hole and escaped with only a scrape on his forehead.
Yeah.
No broken bones, no sprained ankles, no anything. He just scraped his forehead. Imagine falling 40 feet into a hole and you don't break an ankle? You don't break a bone in your leg?
I think it was two falls totaling 40. So an average 20-foot fall still should do something.
Two 20-foot falls?
Like, do drugs make you tougher too on top of everything else?
Well, I think maybe the arms go limber. The body goes limp.
That like, you're not like tense, like, oh my God, I'm falling. That you can just fall freely and happily. That you somehow tumble better.
Trust fall.
Like, okay.
But you would think that with even in under drugs, like, you would still suffer the injuries. Like, usually drugs, you don't feel the pain, perhaps. But he didn't even get hurt, apparently.
I think it's like Gumby. I think once you take that many drugs, it's just like, ooh, you're floating like a snowflake. Now, what's the drug that you do that makes you want to smear the contents of a porta potty all over?
Yeah, well, I mean, he said LSD, and again, what I wish that? Bilotti was here. He is our resident drug expert, right. But that sounds like the culprit. LSD sounds like a thing that would make you do this.
But I'm going to guess there's a few delinquent D-aliens out there that have done said drug and never had the intention to go smear human waste all over themselves.
Yeah.
I thought when I first saw this, he had fallen in the porta potty, or the porta potty had fallen on him.
Oh, no.
And that it was a mistake or an accident that he was covered in waste. But then I read the story, and he purposefully did that.
He signed up for it, yeah.
I don't think he knew he had covered himself in the waste of a porta potty. I think he thinks it was something else. Because when you're under LSD, from my understanding, is you hallucinate anything. Yeah. So he could have thought he was covering himself in flowers and roses and whatever, and it ended up being the contents of a porta potty, which is to wake up and realize what you've done to yourself. That alone, I'd be like, all right, I'm done.
That's actually a good point. He survived with only a scrape physically, but mentally and emotionally, the prison that you live in for the rest of your life, that you willingly smeared that all over your body?
Unless he has no memory of it, and therefore he like can't relive it. He knows it happened, but if he can't like remember the smell and the feel and the taste, maybe that's the one escape route he has from that.
And of all the places to do it, a porta potty in Buffalo, which is just filled with Anchor Bar from last night and filled with all types of...
I mean, I'd rather swim in an actual toilet than be involved with the what's in a porta potty that's just sitting there and that blue goo to, like, kill someone. And it's just like, I mean, it's just horrible.
And that sheriff's department is doing him a favor by not identifying him.
That's true.
Because I think that maybe he doesn't remember. You're right. Maybe he the drugs he was under, he woke up. Maybe he was clean, clothed, and doesn't know what happened to him. But as soon as his name gets out there, and then we all know that this is the man who covered himself in porta potty stuff and fell 30, 40 feet. Now, again, it's like my worst nightmare of being punched at a stadium. This is like that times 500. I mean, to be that person, that would be the worst.
And not for nothing, because I love Bill's Mafia, but it kind of had to be Buffalo, right?
Yes.
This guy that does this, there had to be a 40-foot hole near the stadium. He had to go into the porta potty first. He then had to traverse a 10-foot fence, you said?
Yeah.
There had to be police choppers trying to get him. It kind of had to be Bill's Mafia. Like, this doesn't happen at a Colts game.
No, the only thing we were missing off the Buffalo bingo card was cold. It was not winter yet. Otherwise, I mean, that is about as perfect as it gets for Buffalo.
If he was wearing Zubaz, that is my bingo card.
He was wearing only one of those winter hats that with like the ear flaps you can pull down and tie under your chin. It's flannel. There's a Bills logo. And he's got boots on. Everything else, naked and poop.
He also has a Bruce Smith tattoo.
Yeah. And my other question, too, is if you're the officer who gets the call and you hear this is the call, there's a man who's naked, who's covered in stuff from a porta potty, and he's fallen 40 feet. If you're in the area of Buffalo, are you even phased by this? I mean, this, as you mentioned, this is Buffalo. We kind of maybe would expect this from Bills fans. Like, do you think that officer is even like surprised, or he's like, oh, it's just another Sunday?
They are totally prepped for all worst case scenarios on Sunday home games. Every Buffalo PD, every security guard, every emergency response, they know that Sunday mornings Bills home game can get sideways. They had a guy fall off of the stadium to his death a couple of years ago, remember?
Yeah, and I think we've seen video of people falling into the porta potties, like from the top. So they probably even haven't encountered a porta pottied person before. It's not the first time someone's had that on their person.
And how many injuries happen because of people diving into tables? They must have a broken arm every single week or two at Bills home games.
They should have one of those like army medical tents that's just set up right in the parking lot for those incidents.
They probably do.
It begs the question, guys, with the new stadium, do you think we'll see these types of hijinks?
Yeah. They're not getting new fans, right? It's just a new building.
Well, does it, you know, is it kind of like having your Uncle Rusty, who when he comes over, he gets too drunk, you know, he stumbles out of the house, he says a few racist things. Is it a little different if you ask him to go to a fancier dinner, like a fancier restaurant? Does he still act like that?
I mean, only if they somehow price out regular people from this new building, which I think they wouldn't do. It's going to be the same clientele. They're going to behave the same way.
I mean, now the stadium apparently is going to be in Buffalo as opposed to Orchard Park. So I don't know.
No,
if
it's right next to it.
Oh, it is right next to it. Okay.
This hole was part of the construction of the new stadium.
Yeah, he might have fallen into the future Bills locker room.
Yes, I'm saying this is the legacy. This is the legacy of the new Buffalo Bills stadium now. Oh, my goodness.
You got to put the field goal post in that hole where he fell.
Right. If you thought like Jimmy Hoffa was buried inside the old Meadowlands, like in some kind of like concrete tube, this guy could have died in the future Bills locker room on Sunday.
Future Bills locker. Oh man, that other pregame show. That's too good.
Also on CBS Sports Network. Two. CBS Sports Network 2.
CBS Sports, the Ocho. Or the Nueve. We've gone past the Ocho.
CBS Sports Network, the Nueve. We have that other pregame show where we just watch Bills Mafia stumble to their death while covered in feces.
It's another job they wouldn't hire me for either. Not A-10 basketball, not the other pregame show.
Coming up after that other pregame show, it's kite surfing. But right now, here's John in Buffalo, who seems to be stumbling to his death again.
From porta potty surfing in Buffalo to kite surfing in Kitty Hawk. All without Bogish. Next. Does Shine have a kid to host one of those shows yet? Does he have his own Noah Eagle?
I tell you what, if Cause Game Day is getting, you know, The Rock and Lil Wayne, you know, the other show is getting like Vanilla Ice
on the Nueve. Hey.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
Tight end Cam McCormick of the Miami Hurricanes is petitioning for a 9th year of eligibility. 9 years! Would you want to be a 26-year-old college football player? 62% of you said no! The oldest college football player ever has been Alan Moore, who had his college career interrupted by the Vietnam War before returning to kick at Faulkner University. He kicked an extra point in a game at age 61.
You're not serious.
That's what analytics says. If you enroll in a D1 program, you have 4 years of eligibility, which must be completed in 5 seasons. The only exemptions to pause the clock are military service, religious missions, or foreign services. For D2 and D3 schools, there's a semester clock. However, you can delay this also due to injury as well, which is what Cam McCormick is going on. He's in year 8 right now because he had an Achilles and a broken ankle.
Yeah, exactly.
And in 2000, Chris Wankie became the oldest Heisman Trophy winner at the age of 28 because he put his football career on hold when he was drafted into Major League Baseball. Remember Chris Wankie playing nearly 30 years old in college?
And then how old was Weed when he was drafted? 26?
Yeah, Weeden was old too. Yeah, Weeden was old. Old snapper.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. This dude in Buffalo.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Before Bills Raiders Sunday, a still unnamed 29-year-old man took some drugs, maybe some LSD. Now, most of us would have been done for the day at that point.
Go out, pass the Social Security check, have a good time.
I might be the psychopath here.
But this guy went into a porta potty, took off all his clothes, covered his now naked body with the contents of said porta potty.
I think you're an idiot.
Is it still pregame?
Pregame. This is all in the noon Eastern hour Sunday. It's the other pregame show.
that other pregame poop show. Poopoo butt.
This dude, because he's going to make good decisions, runs toward the construction site for the new Bills Stadium. He climbs a 10-foot fence and makes his first fall into the hole. He starts to run again and falls even farther down.
Oh, my goodness.
Now we're 30 feet below sea level. I don't know how to explain it.
Wow.
There's even, like, a police helicopter on scene, and they say as they're hovering over this guy, laying in the hole, covered in porta-potty remnants, with one hand he gives them the peace sign, with the other, I'm guessing, the middle finger.
Yes!
No law has been broken.
My actions don't require any defense. In the same situation, I'd do it again.
Two 20-foot falls?
Like, do drugs make you tougher, too? On top of everything else?
You can't hurt this! I'm a machine, Dirk!
Well, I think maybe the arms go limber, the body goes limp.
That like, you're not like tense, like, oh my god, I'm falling, that yes. You can just fall freely and happily, that yes. You somehow tumble better.
Trust fall.
So dumb. Like, dumb. Dumb, dumb, dumb.
And of all the places to do it, a porta potty in Buffalo, which is just filled with Anchor Bar from last night.
Ew!
And filled with all types of.
I mean, I'd rather swim in an actual toilet than be involved with the. What's in a porta potty that's just sitting there and that blue goo to like kill someone and it's just like, oh, I mean, it's just horrible.
An epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
All right, that'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Thanks to executive producer EJ Stewart. Thanks to Billy Jacqueline on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Andrew Bogish on your headline. We'll see you tomorrow for a Thirsty Thursday. Be good and be good to one another. I'm DA and the Mothership Disconnects.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.